This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome to Out to Lunch, the podcast in which I take fascinating people out for a slap-up lunch. And all they have to do is be witty and sparkling and tell me all their secrets.
My guest today is a multi-award-winning comedian. She's taken 12 critically acclaimed stand-up shows to the Edinburgh Fringe, sometimes pretending to be Charles I, sometimes an ant. She won the most prestigious comedy award in Britain, the Edinburgh Comedy Award, in 2013, with her show A Bic for Her. You may have heard her on her brilliant radio shows Bridget Christie's Mind of the Gap and Mortal, or indeed seen her brilliant new show on telly, The Change, on Channel 4. She describes herself as a confused, furious, sweaty lady who is annoyed by everything. She is, of course, well, I've already mentioned the name, haven't I? She's Bridget Christie. And before you hear the chat, let me just set the scene. We're eating at Bancone in Soho, where they make fresh pasta every day. And as you'll hear, it gets quite loud and lively at lunchtimes. Here we go then.
How are you?
So lovely
I'm
to
so
see
to meet you.
It's so good to meet you. God, how exciting.
We're in a booth.
We are in a booth.
I like it to sound like we're actually in a restaurant.
Yes.
Which is why I like the sounds of other people's knives and forks.
Yes, clinking. Yeah.
What do you think out to lunch means? I'm beginning to wonder if it's just my generation. But out to lunch to our generation means that's it for the day.
You keep saying our generation, but I'm in your generation.
You're about 15 years behind me, I think.
15?
Yeah.
I'm 51.
Yeah, I'm 66.
Well, do you know what? I was thinking on
You
the
could
way.
Be my child.
Well, you'd have started very young.
Yeah. Do you drink or not?
Yes.
Do you?
I drink.
Well, this
drink.
Is a relief. Because I'm sure I saw somewhere that you'd stopped drinking alcohol.
No, I've cut down a hell of a lot because of the menopause.
Yeah.
Like, it was just not good for me. Like, the sweats,
Yeah. It's not good for anyone.
No, but I could never cut it. These are the things I could not cut out.
Yeah.
Alcohol and coffee. Why don't we have... Would you fancy white?
Yeah. Christian. Hello.
How are we doing today?
I'm very well indeed. We'd like to order some wine, please.
Sure. What are we interested in? I, personally, am kind of...
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
All right.
Yeah, but it's the... I know that is a good one. Vidicchio.
We'll have a bottle of that.
Let me have everything.
What on here is vegan?
So, everything with the vegan.
So, can I have the artichoke, please? I really love kale, but I also love garlic, so I can't decide between...
I do think that the spaghetti is better than the
kale. I'm going to have the spaghetti because I love garlic. Is it really garlicky?
Just enough to smell it in the olive oil. It's like a seasoned pasta.
Is it? Yeah, I'll have that one, please.
I'm going to have the burrata, and then I'll have cacio e pepe.
Awesome.
Grazie. Oh, hello.
Ooh.
Thank you very much.
Yes, please.
Thank you very much
what's
indeed.
What's the, paste?
It's called Romesco sauce.
Oh, nice. It looks sort amazing.
Ground up peppers and almonds.
What were you going to say?
Were you born in... You were born in Gloucester?
I was born in Gloucester.
Because you have a connection, because it's in your fantastic series, The Change, with the Forest of Dean.
I do. But I went to the forest as a child a lot, and it's just remained this really special place to me, and it's all about memories of childhood and I've always wanted to film something there, and it was always, in my mind, it was always summer, and I was...
It looks spectacularly different.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
It looks different to any other forest.
No, it is different, though.
Why? What's in it?
It does look very cinematic.
Yeah.
On screen. But, you know, you've got your redwoods and your pines and all of that. There is...
So it's the kind of... the types of trees that make it particular.
The types of trees, it's the town surrounding it, it's just the way it was shot, it's like its geographic location, it's got a timeless feel to it. Because of where it is geographically, it's not that easy to get to. It's got very strict planning laws, so it never became gentrified, and so it's kind of stayed the same. There's like a butcher's in Colford that's still got the old like 1950s, 60s lettering on the front, and yeah. There's a DIY shop that looks like it's from the 50s as well, with all the stuff outside. There's this area between the River Severn and the Welsh border, and that's the Forest of Dean. And they're very proud, like, to be foresters. And they say, we're not Welsh, we're not English, we're foresters. I would say they're eccentric in the best possible way. But I would say that people from Gloucester are as well.
I think you're very different as well.
No.
But I started listening to Radio 4 in the late 70s. Mm. I sort of turned it on when I left university, and I haven't turned it off yet.
Mm.
So I've listened to every comedy that's ever happened on Radio 4. And when your Bridget Christie's Mind the Gap came on, it was just such a different feeling.
Oh, really?
It was a really different voice. I think you talk about different things and you talk in a different way and you have your accent which you're unafraid of.
And well, like, they did try to knock that out of me because I went to drama school in the early 90s and they said... pretty
you're
much.
You're not going to get nowhere with that.
But they literally did, and I never did. Like, I had to write my own part for myself.
Yeah,
yeah,
very good.
It's
thank
absolutely
you very much.
Delicious. They said you were, and actually, ironically, it is like, this is my first part, and I'm 51, and I had to write it and cast myself in
yeah.
it. So actually, maybe they were right. Maybe if I had listened to them and got rid of it, I sort of dug my heels in it. The other thing they said to me, Age, was like, you have to go to parties and network. And I said, no, I don't. I don't want to do that. And I didn't. And I didn't get anywhere. So yeah. Maybe I should have got
well,
rid of
did.
My
accent. Well, you did. You were still getting somewhere because you were doing your shows all the time.
No, I wasn't.
All right.
I was always interested in humour, like comedy, from like watching old black and whites, Harold Lloyd, Laurel and Hardy with my
yeah.
dad. And
oh, I love Laurel and Hardy.
Oh, God, love
my
them.
My absolute favourite.
Yeah, mine too.
I think you can look at Laurel and Hardy and you can see... anyone can tell any joke now, anywhere, and you can see the original joke there.
I agree. Like the house falling down and then bricks falling on.
Yeah.
And on the realisation that I'm never going to get out of this part and this role and I just have to sit here and be abused.
Yeah.
And the humanity in it. Comedy that works on multiple different levels that can be enjoyed by people of different ages is just the pinnacle, isn't it?
Mm.
And they did that, and they did that a very, very long time ago. And brilliant parts for women as well, you know, way, way, way ahead.
You probably wouldn't have got to the change without doing the path you've done.
Oh, do you know what? I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't have written the change or have that come out at any other point in my life. And it couldn't have, actually, because... you know, it really evolved over time and I'm a different person now and, you know, it's a very rare thing to...
How long have you had it in your pocket?
7 years from beginning to... because it was different at the beginning. That central character wasn't in the menopause because I wasn't 7 years ago.
Wow.
I know. It was about a middle-aged woman whose life hadn't turned out as she'd planned and she had lost her sense of self and identity and didn't really know who she was and where she was going. So it was about this idea of mortality and time changing and finding out who we are and what we're going to do with the time that we've got left.
Yeah.
All those kinds of themes. Originally, it was like way back when Gloucester, but... she was going to go to the Forest of Dean, so I always wanted to set something there because of my relationship with the place.
Paul Whitehouse doing a genuine accent. Do you know what it is? Or is it just all-purpose West Country? I mean, he's very good. He's very good at copying people.
I wasn't a good mimic. You know, like the accents, I was like, you know what, this is, there's a certain amount of artistic license,
yeah.
like we can use, I don't want that to be something that blocks people. So
yeah.
if you can do,
yeah.
I'm sure there's, you know, if there's any foresters listening, they'll be absolutely bloody furious. I know that Monica worked very hard. Monica Dolan,
yeah.
Carmel.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. Like, she does so much work. I know, because she's a friend on, like, the certain nuances of accents and stuff like that. But I did say to people, you know, general West Country is fine, because it's not like it's who they are, really, for me. The sense of place was very important.
Did you know Jerome before you used him, Jerome Flynn?
What an extraordinary yeah. special person.
Did
no.
you, but did you know?
No.
Because, I mean, I do know him slightly.
Do you?
Well, I've worked with him before.
Have you?
And I,
oh.
knew, I knew him when he was really, when he was still at drama school.
It Can really I tell is. You the story?
The last time I worked with him, in about 4 or 5 years ago.
Was he living in a cave?
well, we're in a hotel in Cardiff, and he would have to go out every morning with no shoes on and find a bit of earth to put his feet on.
Oh, that's
I mean, it's a
so
lovely idea.
Lovely.
But he had to get in touch with earth.
Let me tell you the Jerome thing. So
yeah.
most of the people were just sent their scenes. Paul said just straight away. And they were like, I was like, oh, my God.
Did you write with him in mind?
Yes.
Yeah.
And with Jim Howick in mind for the verderer.
Right.
And for the...
What is that word?
It's a verderer.
Verderer. And what does it... For the first couple of episodes, I thought they were saying murderer. A murderer.
All ancient forests in England all had, in the Norman times or whatever, yeah. they had verderers, and they were guardians of the forest. So, especially because, like, the king owned them, so...
Yeah.
And that's where they would go to hunt for deer and all of that stuff.
No. Mm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Forest of Dean has held on to these lovely old traditions, and our verderer, Jim Howick, isn't even a real one, but he
right.
calls himself
yeah.
one.
Right.
There's something really quite sad about that.
Yeah.
He's searching for power and status, that character.
When he first starts, he comes across as a bit of a kind of misogynist.
Is yeah, but fair? He's angry at but, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but,
yeah.
but you realise, like with most people,
yeah.
They're just
threatened and afraid
yeah,
and lonely.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah, yeah, exactly.
Everyone just wants to be accepted by everyone else.
I just felt so sad that there are these lonely people out there, and they're just filled with hate all the time. And I think that about, because I've been the victim of trolls and things like that, I do sometimes feel like saying to people, if you see me, right, and you go, oh, there's Bridget Christie off Radio 4, or and she's got this show now on Channel 4, that isn't my life. Like,
yeah.
I'm from a big... working class Irish family. I left school really with no qualifications. I did loads of like dead end jobs until I was about 36. I only really became like had any success with comedy when I was 40. Genuinely
yeah.
40. That's when I did an Edinburgh show.
That's your first one.
Well, like, no, that was the first one that did quite well.
Right.
And then I got the Mind's the Gap off the back of that.
Yeah.
And I'm 51 now. But I think it's easy for sometimes to impose our insecurities onto people who look like they've had it easy
yeah.
or they're privileged. And actually, most of us, if you get to meet us and know about us, we actually haven't. Like, very few people are in positions of privilege. And that can be down to all sorts of things, like, were they loved? Like, they might be rich, but they may have been sent off to boarding school. So I think the verderer is quite clearly
yeah.
the one who's struggling the most in the change. I haven't told you the Jerome Flynn story.
No, come on.
So here's the funny thing. He's called Pigman, and he goes to the forest. So he has this calling to go to that forest in particular and live there. And then I found out that he had done all this animal activism, and he had made a film about how pigs are kept in this country and how they're killed, called Hogwood, a Modern Horror Story. So that's like this first amazing thing. And then the second thing is that character, the only thing that he's brought into his new life from his old luxurious life is he loves coffee. So he brings like a milk frother with him to
yeah.
his cave, and that's like the one luxury, and his expensive Italian biscuits, Cantucci, that
yeah.
he gets imported in. Jerome said, oh, and the first time I spoke to him, you won't know this, but in my area, I'm known as the frothy coffee guy. No, I was like, what? Well, I couldn't have possibly have known that. And he's like, I know, it's so weird. And then we just hit it off so well, so straight away. And I think, God, all the people on this were just, I was meant to meet them.
Yeah. Has it been recommissioned? Have you, is series two coming?
Well, I've had three scripts commissioned.
Right.
But I haven't had the second series commissioned yet. But I would be so sad, because what I've done is I've set loads of things up. Like, they're short half hours. They're like 24 minutes on.
Yeah.
It's so weird because I've got spaghetti. And I read that Jodie Comer had a scene in, I think it was Killing Eve, where she was eating pasta and she almost nearly choked to death. They had to get...
Because one went down.
It went down the wrong way, and yeah, then someone had to run on and basically give her the Heimlich, I think. So I'm really worried about...
Mine's delicious. Is yours all right?
Mine is absolutely amazing. Mm. It's so delicious. Yeah,
cacio e pepe is the most simple dish.
What's just in it, then?
It's just cheese and pepper.
God, is it?
Yeah. You just grate out some cheese and pepper and use a little of the pasta water.
God.
And throw it all in.
I bet if I made it, it wouldn't be that delicious, then.
You can make it.
And this pasta is cooked to absolute perfection.
Hello. It's Ollie here. I'm the executive producer on Out to Lunch. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, one of the relationships I'm proudest of in my life is with my daughters. They're not quite the age to go for fancy lunches with celebs yet, but we do enjoy our family dinners together in relative harmony. You know, give us time, that they are still quite young. But this takes work, and it's a mistake to think that relationships have to be easy to be right. The best relationships come out of learning to live with each other and keeping our sense of humour, even when food is spilt all over the table or dinner's not to everyone's liking. It can be really tricky, but therapy can help you with those skills. You can work through parenting challenges, explore seeing eye to eye as a couple, and work through your relationship with yourself too. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's flexible and you can switch therapists at any time, as that's a relationship that needs to be the right fit too. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/outtolunch today and get 10% off your first month.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Dearest Lunchers, just to let you know that after you've finished listening to this, there's more. Yes, more. Join me over on The Digestivo, where you can hear your favourite guests tell us their top five restaurants in the world. Yes, that's in the world. That's potentially 60 restaurant recommendations from our special guests. And let me tell you, they know a thing or two about dining out. The Digestivo is also the place where we squeeze in some of the juicy extras that we didn't have room for in our regular episodes. For just £2.99 a month, you can get all that and every episode completely ad-free, way less than the price of an actual Digestivo. This is the sort of thing you could be missing.
And it's meant to be the best example of Art Deco in the country.
Yeah.
I love everything about it.
Yeah.
I love the place. I love the guy on the piano. I love the raw celery salad thing. Oh, God.
See? Start your free trial of the Digestivo now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Out to Lunch show page on Apple Podcasts. We'd also love to hear from you about your food experiences, from the most heavenly to the most excruciating. Just email lunch@sonymusic.com. Right then, back to the chat.
You were in a kind of, not a Hell's Angels gang, but
I wasn't in the Wolves Outlaws.
Were you not?
But I was friends with some of the members of the Wolves Outlaws, yeah, which was like a Gloucester gang.
Did you really leave school at 14?
15.
15.
So I lied about my age and I got a job in the local newspaper. But I did have a bike then as well. I had a 125, and then when I was 17, you can get a bigger one, a 250. Yeah. But I was very sensible.
What bike?
A Honda RS250 I had. Oh, yeah. And then my first bike was a Yamaha 175. and I loved them so much, and I loved being on a bike. And then I was riding bikes until I was 23 when I went up to London to go to drama school, and I couldn't really keep one anywhere and didn't have the money to keep a mode of transport anyway. And then when I was 49.
Had a midlife crisis and bought one.
And bought another one, bought a Triumph. And I was so nervous, because I hadn't ridden a bike in
one
about
of those
30 years.
Sort of ones that looks like an old one.
Yes, a bobber. Yeah. So yeah. I got myself a Triumph Bonnivant bobber. Yeah. Because I didn't want to
get... Which works better than the old ones.
Yeah, and I didn't want to break down in the middle of nowhere and not, you know.
Yeah.
And so I went to pick it up, and I was really nervous going down to pick it up, because I thought, what if I drop it, or what if I can't remember how to ride? And actually, I've used this as a real, like, experience to live the rest of my life with, which is that things will frighten you, but that is not a reason not to do them.
Yeah.
And I think a life without fear is not a life fully led. Like, I think you've got to embrace things.
Yeah.
I would say that I'm a naturally frightened person. Like, that horn just frightened me, for example. Like, like random, like, the toast popping up scares me. And, yeah, I'm just like that with noises. But also, I have a tendency to overthink things. Do you do that?
I think about
every possible scenario of a thing. And of a reaction to something.
You're an insomniac.
No, but I used to have terrible, 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 terrible trouble sleeping. And then... because I'm a runner, so I run most days if I can. And if I don't, which, because I've been really busy with the change the last few weeks, and if I've not managed to get a run in, then I will have a bit of trouble sleeping.
I've been in insomniac since late 30s.
Oh, God, really? Nothing has helped it?
Stoicism has helped it a little bit.
How did you find it? What made you find it?
I saw a review in a paper book called Philosophy for Life and Other Dangerous Situations by a man called Jules Evans. I give it to a lot of people, and that most people like. If you never heard it,
respond,
I'll send
really
you a
well
copy.
To it. Yeah, that sounds...
It's a really good book. I mean, it's a self-help book, I suppose, in a way. Well, no, it's talking about philosophy.
Well, do you know what really helps me, like, is... And this happened to me in lockdown. I suddenly realised I had this overwhelming gratitude for my life, my health, the world around me, my loved ones, nature. And I was really aware of time passing.
Yeah.
Because before lockdown, when we were sort of forced to stop, weren't we?
Yeah, and I loved it. Did you love it or did you hate it?
Well, both. I was worried about work a little bit.
Did you not make Mortal during lockdown?
Yes. So I recorded that myself from home during lockdown.
Tell me about how you made it, because I love Mortal.
Oh, thank
you. And it's so conversational. And yet you're talking to yourself in... There's three different personas of you, at least. There's the one in the future, and then there's two of you talking to each other in the house. I mean, you obviously recorded it yourself.
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
What I would normally do is write a script and do it in front of an audience in the radio theatre.
Yeah.
But this was a real opportunity to not do that. So I thought what I'd love to do is address the audience directly and use the medium of radio in a way that I'd not done before. So doing different voices, just thinking differently, but about a really important subject, which was mortality.
Yeah.
And to split it up into four sections, like birth, life, death, and the afterlife. Like these things that I was thinking about so much during lockdown, and we were surrounded by death, but and life as we are all the time anyway. And how do we negotiate that, and how do we navigate it, and how do we come to terms with
our own mortality.
Our own mortality.
Mortality is about living as much as it is about dying.
Well, exactly, yeah. And there were two books that sort of changed the way that I think about that. One is Being Mortal by Atul Gawande, and one is With the End in Mind by Dr. Catherine Mannix. Mm. It's such a difficult thing to get your head around, but we have to live with it, and other cultures are much better at dealing with it. I mean, we will plan our kids' birthday parties with much more rigour and detail than we do our own deaths. And so I wanted to talk about that, but I wanted to do it differently. I wanted to do like funny voices and accents and things like that. And I thought, well, maybe it's an opportunity for me to do that rather than doing stand-up like on the radio.
Yeah.
Then I wanted to talk about the natural world, and I wanted us to hear the world around me and those sounds, like going to the park. And I wanted for it to be like a diary of like my day to day.
Yeah.
But to make it really.
So there's bits of you, the washing machine.
That are mundane, but also.
Then occasionally you're out on the street, and I never quite understand why.
Yeah.
But it's just nice. You think, oh, now she's out on the street.
Yeah, or in the park. Just, or something.
It sounds like it's just occurred to her just then as she was walking down the road.
Yeah. So then I would record all of these things, and I had a producer called Carl Cooper, and this show was the both of us made it. I just really want to make that really clear. There's absolutely no way that Mortal would exist without Carl Cooper. Yeah. So what we would talk about is, okay, so they're split into four, and you record everything, but... you know, we want to have through lines and we want to have different things. So it was then a puzzle as to what goes next and what are we saying? Because it all had to really fit together really well, and it had to be authentic. But how do you do like the voice of an ant, but make it feel real as well, and not just silly? So then, silly is great, right? Because that's what life is. Life is tragic and sad and painful and silly and absurd and embarrassing and all of these things. And we don't have the answers to things, do we? Well, what my favourite thing in the whole world is to think about a terrible, sad thing and finding a way of being humorous about it.
Yeah.
That to me is like...
That's like... encapsulating life, isn't it?
That's what life is.
Because life is very sad and very funny at the same time.
For me, I feel like I'm in such a privileged position to be able to do stand-up. Like, that to me is like one of the purest art forms. It's like something can happen.
I've always been absolutely terrified of stand-up. I've done a double act. Though you used to pretend to be other
people.
You used to pretend to be Charles II or an ant or something. Is it you, then?
It's an extension of me. Yeah. So my who I am, Bridget Christie, the stand-up, is an exaggerated version of me, I would say.
Do you like her?
I think she's a bit annoying.
Well, she's not annoying. She's
I don't know. I'm trying to imagine her.
She does a bit of whining, but in a very funny way. I'm righteous whining.
Right. I'm going to ask you a question now.
Yeah.
Would you say that Mark Thomas was a whiner? Would you say that Nish Kumar whined? I would say that, like, Bridget Christie, like, that stand-up person is political.
Yeah. So is whining a misogynist word?
Well, no, I'm not saying that you... But
that's the question.
That's the question, and that's an interesting... Let's think about somebody else. Jack D. Would you say he was a whiner?
Yeah. I would.
Yeah, you'd say he's a whiner.
Yeah.
He whines.
I say he complains. His act is about complaining.
His act is about... It's a funny one, isn't it? You know, I really believe that there is literally nothing on earth that can't be joked about. I feel that so strongly in my... But, like, I would fight for the right to... say, talk about absolutely anything.
Yeah.
If you think about death and just like the worst things, I think it's a fundamental right to be able to talk about them. But crucially, it is, what is the audience laughing at?
Yeah.
What is the context for it? What's the objective and the motivation with this?
When you write there, you don't set out, you're not writing from a platform. You're writing from wanting to make people laugh.
Every time.
So the agenda is just part of you. I think this is what Rick and I were. I think the comic strip club used to be called, used to be famously non-sexist, non-racist.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Rick and I were doing a joke about a gooseberry in a lift. And some people would complain and say, well, how can a joke about a gooseberry in a lift be left-wing? And we say, well, it's not about what we say, it's about what we're not saying.
Yeah. We used to go into school after watching The Young One, and, like, it would really, we would just be quoting, and everyone quoted, because we watched TV in a different way back then. And I think that comedy has real power, actually. I think.
Looks like we enjoyed everything.
Yes.
Do you know what? I think that might have been the best plate of pasta I've ever had.
Try it again then. Desserts? Have any
coffee? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll be back with that. I've got the menu. I'll get you the digestive list.
Thank you.
I only know your radio show. I've never seen you live.
Yeah.
But it's not like... It's much more philosophical. And that's why I love it. It's got a kind of... Oh. It's got a kind of a view on the world that I haven't heard before.
Oh, you definitely will have.
No, I haven't.
It's probably just my accent.
Well, your accent is part of it, but you are a philosopher.
Absolutely won't hear of it.
You are, but you do it through stupid comedy.
Oh, I like that.
I was talking to my daughter last night. You've met my daughter.
Yes.
She used to be in the Birthday Girls.
Yes, she did.
Well, the Birthday Girls still exist as a... potential
idea. We used to do the little sketch.
But she said, I said, I'm going to have lunch with Bridget tomorrow. And she said, oh, we always used to see her backstage dressed as an ant.
I know. Well, at the time, dressing as an ant and talking about an ant's experience
of
the world and of the comedy circuit as a metaphor for being...
So you do metaphors. A lot of people just do jokes. You do thinking metaphors. That's why you're a cut above.
No, it's because what I'm thinking of is how can you mix things up? So, like, instead of just saying the thing, what else can I do with it? And I think that the more elements you can throw at that, the more interesting it becomes. There's lots of comedy that works on many different levels.
Yeah.
And that's like your optimum position is how can this be funny to look at? But then if I watched it again, how would it be funny philosophically? Or how can I write this line in a better way? Is it if I put that at the end, is that better? Yes, it is, because the laugh has to come at the end of the line, not in the middle of it.
I did an episode of Blackadder once, and they just spent all day every day saying, is halibut funnier than mackerel? You know.
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, there you go. In The Change.
Yeah.
I think your editor thinks our tellies are bigger than mine is. But the telephone messages are very small.
They are.
But you get messages from your kids. You don't mention your kids much in all your stuff. You devoid yourself of your immediate circumstance.
For me, I'm able to talk about genuinely what I feel about things, but in terms of using real world events and people, I prefer
to use a fictional version
of that.
I agree.
Which doesn't mean that it's not authentic.
Yeah.
What you're getting is me. Situations, events and people surrounding that are fiction. Like, they're not real, but they are... personifications are real, so they're combinations of people and things, and but I am myself.
You are Bridget Christie,
yeah,
but there's another Bridget Christie.
My uncle was a priest, right? He was a Catholic priest, and before he did his sermons every week, he would always want to put himself in the story. So, and this is how I've tried to do my stand-up, is what has happened to me that is funny or unusual, and then how can I talk about a subject within that context?
Yeah.
So how can I make this little insignificant thing relevant to a bigger issue? That's what I try and do. Should we have a coffee?
Yeah, I'll have a double espresso, please.
I'm going to have a coffee, please.
Did you ever do a column? You did do a column.
I did do a column in The Guardian for about 6 months. I enjoyed them, but I found, like, thinking of, like, having an opinion every week about something.
You did a few years on the Daily Mail Diary.
I was a secretary in that.
Oh, were you? Were you not writing it?
No, right. Sometimes they would send me out to parties if there weren't enough reporters, but I would never stitch someone up or do like a gossip story or anything like that. But I was temping at the time. That was for Nigel Dempster. God.
Was it? Nigel Dempster, I remember him, Was it fun?
Yeah, I met loads of amazing people and got into really weird situations, like on the lap of Lord Bath at a party with him.
Is he the
saying,
mad guy from?
Yeah, so you can be my, you know, the one with all the wifelets.
Oh,
we've had some
called,
wine
now,
and I'm going to be telling all these like mad stories.
Yeah.
Yes, I ended up at I think it was might have been a Daily Mail Christmas party. You know Lord Bastard the Hare? He's like an artist. Lives at Longleat.
Well, he's dead now, isn't he?
The Marquess of...
Yeah. Oh, is he dead? Is
no,
he not
I
dead
think
yet?
He's dead now.
But his son's taken over, but he's... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he had two
another
sons
one.
Or something.
He looked like Vivian Sanchel,
he looked
Sanchel,
like a
basically.
Wizard, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like, he was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know why I was on his lap. I think he might have put, like, that. I didn't choose to be.
Yeah.
I think I was just pulled over, which is, I don't know. And then I was like, oh, God, someone get me off. I think I tried to get, but he was like, oh, I've got 73 wifelets and you could be the 74th. And I was like, I think I'm okay, actually. Yeah, don't worry about it, mate. I'm all right. Yeah, no, I'm just going to get a drink, I think. Because I was like, you know, oh, go to the premiere.
You're just going to society parties.
Yes. And I was really poor at the time, so I was living in a bedsit. And I was doing
nice
stand-up.
Canapes and
do you know what, Aid? That was my evening meal. I did. Because I was living, I earned...
This is the good food story.
This is the good food story.
I was looking you up. And I said, there isn't a food story, Vicky
there
isn't. Christie.
The food
but
story
here it
is this. I'm going to tell you what it is.
The food story is you used to live on canapes.
I lived in a... I came back from travelling when I was, I don't know, 30 or something, 31. And then I wanted to get back into comedy, but I needed a day job. So I was renting this flat in Parsons Green, and it was really expensive, and it took all my salary, every bit of it, apart from, like, £20 a week or something. So I would have... I was temping, and then this Daily Mail thing, and they said, we've not been able to fill the part because Nigel Dempster keeps throwing dictionaries at people. Or, like, the secretaries that come in. And I was like, oh, you know, I'll give him what for.
Yeah.
So I was meant to just be there for a week, but I sort of got on quite well with him and said, oh, you can't talk to me like that or whatever. And then I ended up staying for much longer than I'd anticipated. And then they were like, oh, you can go out to, if there wasn't enough reporters to cover an event, you go out. And I was like, well, I'm not a writer or anything like that. But I would go and then I would have little canapes and champagne. Yeah. And that's what I would eat. I would eat in the canteen at lunchtime and at a party at night. And that was how I sort of existed. And then, yeah, I became his sort of sponsor because he became a Catholic before he died.
Did he?
Yeah, and I was wearing a cross, I think, and he said, you're a Catholic, aren't you? And I said, yeah. And he said, oh, you seem like quite a nice person. Would you be my sponsor? And I was like, yeah, okay. I went, took him to Lourdes to be, like, baptised with my sister.
Not the cricket pitch.
Lourdes in France. Like the pilgrimage, yeah. And I think there was a book written about him, and there's like a photo of me like going, oh, hello, with like a hat on.
So what's coming up next?
Oh, so my big tour starts in September, and that's for 3 months. So
what's
loads,
it called,
loads of dates there. Who am I?
Who am I?
Yeah.
Have you worked that out?
No.
Have you written it? Do you know who you're going to be?
Well, I'm me, but yeah. I'm just not quite sure who that is yet. Yeah. I think I know who I am now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But come and find out.
I shall. To end, I have to ask you one question. Your dad's potatoes.
Oh, my dad's potatoes.
Tell me about your dad's potatoes.
This is what he does. He gets his potatoes, but he always gets the right potatoes. He peels them, he rinses them, he soaks them. Then he boils them, or he does whatever he does with them, chip them, roast them. And I remember potatoes, like, I don't know if this is an Irish thing, but, you know, we would have our meal and then he would put milk on his potatoes and, like, loads of butter. And I just thought that was normal. And then, like, to put butter on your chips. And then, like, we would go to, like, very rarely go to a friend's house and we were like, oh, don't you put butter on your chips? But, yeah... Don't you pour milk over your potatoes at the end of the meal?
What, roast potatoes?
No, that would be mashed potatoes. That would be mash.
Yeah.
And his chips are, I'm going to send you a film that my niece made of my dad making chips from beginning to end. And it's a thing of beauty. I can't tell you what he does to them. They're just the best chips, roasties, mash, anything that you'll ever have. Pete's chips.
Peach chips.
Yeah.
Bridget, it's been absolutely an honour to meet
you. Oh, God, it's been such an honour.
Take you out to lunch.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to the terrific human being that is Bridget Christie. For news about her upcoming gigs that run through to December, go to www.bridgetchristie.co.uk. We also talked about her brilliant show The Change, which is available to stream for free on channel4.com, on desktop or on the app. And thanks to the kind folks at Bancone, who have restaurants in Covent Garden and Soho in London. Find them at bancone.co.uk. Please follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your pods for new episodes. And this is the deal. If you tell more people about us, we might be able to make some more. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Thank you to our production team. Production management is Poppy Thompson. The assistant producers are Rani Prescott and Dulcie Wadcock. Social media is Jonathan Imiere. The recording engineer is Shivani Makwana. And the mix engineer is Gulliver Tikel. The senior producer is Selena Ream, and the executive producer is Ollie Wilson. Out to Lunch is a Sony Music Entertainment production. That was Out to Lunch. We've eaten all the grub that set our lips a-smacking. That was Out to Lunch. We polished off the booze and soiled our napkins.